So you've decided to give up that old behavior that's been killing you and all you care for and surrender to a power greater than yourself. That's the first step. Surrender is what opens the prison door. Now it's time to walk through that door and into a whole new way of life. Spirituality, self-care, service, social connection, and the simple daily disciplines that pave the way to lasting freedom. This is Positive Sobriety.
Welcome to another episode of the Positive Sobriety Podcast. I'm Nate Larkin.
I'm David Hampton.
And here on a gray, overcast day, winter day here in Tennessee, I have been reflecting lately on the amazing diversity within the recovery community.
Absolutely. I have had so many people talk about Nashville being a great town in which to find sobriety, but what I want people to realize, it's a great town to find very diverse approaches to sobriety.
And I've expanded my reading list lately. I'm lugging three books around now that are outside the circle that I normally read in.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm making some great synthetic connections.
Mm-hmm.
It seems as I'm challenging old assumptions.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to tell you, David, it's kind of invigorating my own recovery.
Right.
I thought maybe I'd start to get just a little bit ossified.
Mm.
Just a little bit calcified there in my approach. I'm grateful for where I am and you know, how far we've come, but there's always more to learn, always more to see.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you have found some curious, adventurous people within the therapeutic community in the treatment world.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Who aren't afraid just to kind of challenge existing assumptions, to venture into experimental territory.
Absolutely. Lee McCormick and Holly Cook are with the Integrative Life Center here in Nashville.
Yeah.
And it is a unique program because of the way that they allow us to come to terms with ourselves and our stories and really delve into the individual places that we are, the belief systems that we have, where do those beliefs need to be challenged? What are the things I'm telling myself?
Yeah.
And not just, here is how you check in and here is when you check out. And by the time you do, you'll have checked these boxes.
Yeah, yeah.
But very, just bringing all these things about ourselves under one umbrella and coexisting.
Well, I think our listeners are going to enjoy this conversation. I'm quite eager for it myself. So rather than spend any more time here, as much as I love talking with you,
absolutely.
why don't we get to the really interesting people, our
guests? That's probably a good idea.
Do that. Okay. So stay with us. We'll be back in just a second here on the Positive Sobriety Podcast. And we're back on the Positive Sobriety Podcast. And today, David has drawn from his wide circle of professional friends in Nashville a couple of fascinating guests. Introduce them for us, David, will you?
Well, we've got Lee McCormick and Holly Cook from Integrative Life Center. And this is interesting because when we get into recovery and positive sobriety and all the things we talk about every week, it's a great thing to be able to explore with people who are doing some things that are just a little bit different than your standard treatment care. Nashville's a great town for sobriety and recovery, mm-hmm. but there are some people doing some things a little bit differently and a little bit in a little bit more unique perspective than others at times. And so it's not all a one-size-fits-all. And so I like to get to the opportunity to talk to people that are doing something kind of different. And so Lee and Holly are graciously agreeing to share their world with us today for a little bit.
Well, Lee and Holly, welcome, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, well, I'm always curious to know how any of our guests found their way into the world of recovery and into the kind of work they're now engaged in. So I wonder, maybe we could start with Holly. How did you happen into recovery, find yourself in this field?
It probably is a lifelong story. I had a mother who was a school teacher, and that was back when school teachers could bring kids home and feed them and,
oh,
you know, take care of them if they were not getting what they needed. And so that was the model for me early on in my life. And I went through some pretty difficult times with parents getting divorced when I was in high school and things like that. And like probably most people, found alcohol and then other drugs helped me to numb the pain, the emotional pain, because I just had never been taught how to manage that, and that actually was just a part of life.
Yes.
And so started using alcohol and other drugs and came to a decision point. And I was one of those very high-functioning folks that nobody truly really knew the extent of my alcohol and drug use. Even my husband, that's how good I was at hiding it.
Wow.
Managing a multi-million-dollar contract for a company overseas in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an adolescent drug and alcohol program, ironically enough. And I'd gone through graduate school, became a therapist, had been working in the field for a while, and realized one night that my thinking was, this is it. This is all life has to offer.
Yeah.
Is just kind of getting up and doing the same thing over and over and over. And so I decided then and there that it was, I didn't want to live my life that way. In 12-step programs, we talk about being sick and tired of being sick and tired.
Yeah.
And so I did start going to 12-step programs and then began realizing that what I was exposed to and what I was hearing and listening to felt too limiting to me, and began to expand my perception really of that spiritual awakening, and went and read early works of Bill Wilson's and C.S. Lewis, and I just really began reading as much as I could get my hands on, because when I was 16 and my parents going through divorce, I had made the decision to get baptized.
Yeah.
And
and
it was a felt sense shifting experience for me, not just a something to do. And so for me, that shifting and felt sense experience has kind of driven and informed much of the work that I have done for myself personally, but also in the clients that I work with, because I am still a therapist, not at Integrative Life Center, but part-time practice. So, so it started with baptism, 12-step recovery, and then an expansion of and an understanding of the spiritual principles of life, which are universal spiritual principles, not one religion or one recovery program.
Yeah. And so as you got into deeper into recovery, Holly, you found opportunities then to work with the population that you understood uniquely, I guess.
Well, and interestingly enough, I worked in the treatment field before I ever got into recovery.
Right.
And
as a recovering person, how did that impact your understanding of the people you were already working with, I guess would be a better way to ask that question.
For me, it's one piece that informs, and really, and I think this speaks to the work that we do at Integrative Life Center, is that rather than make assumptions that my experience is going to be your experience, David, as a male, or your experience, Nate, or Lise, that my experience can be informative, but I don't make assumptions that my experience is other people's experience.
Right.
And I think that's one of the things when we talk about personalized treatment, because you hear that all over the place, it really is our staff. The perspective is, we're going to sit down with you and we're going to listen and we're going to look at your patterns of behavior, and right. then look at that from a place, you know, from the heart, with compassion, with love, with what happened to you, and what do you want?
Yeah.
What kind of life do you want to create?
Yeah.
So it gives me some foundation, but it's not, you know, for me, my experience is not, I don't overlay it onto you and
right.
make that assumption,
yeah.
which I think is really important.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, as I was in my 30s when I got sober, and you know, as a 30-year-old female married with a child, sometimes I would sit in meetings and hear people say, "Don't get in a relationship for the first year," and I was thinking, "Oh my God, I wish I had that luxury of not being in a relationship and trying to
get out
sober.
Of a relationship
exactly.
in the first year."
Exactly. How do you know? And so it was, how do you do this and be married, stay married, be a mom? Be a full-time work, you know, that kind of thing. So some of those things that I heard, I kept thinking, well, I can't do that, so what do I do?
So what do I do?
Instead, yes.
Wow.
So, Lee, you're the founder of this this thing down there, this magical place on 16th Avenue. How did you happen into the world of recovery?
Just the course of my life.
Yeah.
You know, it's, I checked myself into a treatment center when I was 41.
Really? 41?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've always had kind of a different relationship with life. I never really bought into the official story of what you need to do to be good enough.
Mm-hmm.
I struggled with that. I would try and do what I should do in order to be a happy, productive member of society, or, you know, do what my family thought or this or that. But, you know, like the majority of us, you know, we're born into families that have issues, and we inherit a legacy that's kind of, it's a mess.
Yes.
And nobody is really acknowledging that, right? Mm-hmm. When you're a kid, all the adults are busy being adults and everybody's living their roles. And, I was born into a great family. It was a big family, big, old Southern, pretty powerful family in Florida. And there was a lot of energy. And my dad was in the heavy construction business.
Mm-hmm.
My parents got divorced when I was 12. My mom married a man who was just bigger than life kind of guy a few years after that. And because I never really connected with being a businessman or being, I was never competitive like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I knew more what I didn't want to do with my life than what I did want to do with my life. And I kept gravitating toward the things that were where I had a real relationship, which my family had ranches in Florida and in Wyoming. So I grew up around cattle and horses and in the woods and on the beach.
Mm-hmm.
Holly and I actually have known each other since we were kids.
Oh, wow.
And so, you know, I ended up playing music. My mom bought me a guitar when I was 12 or 13. Moved to Nashville with a band in the late 70s. And that was just like, things went from kind of, you know, partying a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I hung out with Waylon's crew back in the late 70s. So that was like big time. Like
sure,
if you couldn't
sure.
stay up for 3 days, you couldn't cut it.
and
you know, one thing led to another. Well, I burned out on being on the road and playing all the time. And I went back to school at Belmont.
Yeah.
And ended up getting married. And while the frame of my life changed, the behaviors didn't change, right?
Uh-huh.
So my coping mechanism or the way I dealt with frustration or anger, you know, when I tell my story or used to tell my story, I'd say, you know, my reaction to a really good day, I realized was the same as my reaction to a really bad day. So it's kind of like, wait a minute, what am I doing here? And so I ended up checking myself into a treatment center in Arizona, which was really a cool experience. And what I learned in that 5 weeks, sitting in group, I went to Sierra Tucson, which at that time was, you know, was just an amazing experience.
Yeah, yeah.
All of this being pre-corporate days. But I realized the whole kind of backside of being human, you know, like the mm-hmm. unspoken side of our reality, to sit in a group with people from really good, upstanding, kind of quote-unquote families mm-hmm. and successful families and respected families, you know, from different cultures and different areas of the country, and then to hear the truth,
yeah,
you know, of the abuse and the trauma and the heartbreak and the dysfunction and, you know, all the masks
yeah.
that yeah. we wear in our culture, everybody pretending that life is one thing while it's actually something mm-hmm. completely else yeah. Going
yeah.
on,
yeah.
you know, and to me that was, well, it's humbling, mm-hmm. you know, it's like, okay, well, I thought I had problems. I just need to shut up. I don't really have problems. I'm just crazy. and I came to that conclusion pretty quick. You know, I'm yeah. just nuts, man. That's my problem.
Yeah.
But it opened up it gave me a heartfelt connection. And it made sense to me then why I could never really buy into go to school and develop a career and make a lot of money and mm-hmm. own a bunch of stuff and have a family and all that leads to happiness. Mm-hmm. You know, watching all the conflict
yes.
between family members as a kid growing up from, you know, some really great, powerful, super successful people and all my parents' friends.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, they yeah. were, my stepdad was one of the founders of Winn-Dixie. And so I was around, you know, I was around real tycoons and their families, and they were great people. And then there was all this conflict,
yeah.
you know, and all that energy around money and power and control. And I just used to watch that stuff and think, this is crazy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, these guys they're not really happy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not really, mm-hmm. you know. And so it made sense of all that to me. I was like, well, of course, everybody's kind of operating on a half honest level here in our mm-hmm. culture. And that inspired me. It was like, whoa, okay. Well, that's cool. And then in early recovery, because again, I can't do anything the way you're supposed to do it. It's just not how I operate.
Yeah.
You know, so I started going to meetings. Mm-hmm. And meetings were great because I needed a way to ground.
Sure.
And I needed the ability to step out of my reality and go sit somewhere and just, you know, check in.
Yeah.
But the belief system around recovery, like my name is and I'm a, that didn't feel right either.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It yeah. was like, my name is and I don't have a clue.
Yeah.
That was
yeah.
the truth.
Yeah.
My name's Lee and I have no idea what I really am.
Yeah. yeah.
Or what I'm really doing here.
Yeah.
And so, you know, my talking to a higher power, my talking to the spirit people was like, okay, guys, whatever's really going on here, I really need to sort this out. So if you can help me sort this out, you give me the opportunities and I'll say yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, and I started reading a lot of books. It was the 90s and we had bookstores.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
you know, and I read all kinds of stuff, man. Yeah. I read, you know, the Bhagavad Gita. Mm-hmm. I read the Bible. I read mm-hmm.
Carlos Castaneda.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all the Castaneda stuff again. Mm-hmm. I read Marianne Williamson. I went yeah. to Course in Miracles groups. Mm-hmm. I went to yoga classes. And then I met a Native American guy. I did some work with OnSite.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was their equine contractor
for
3 years right after I got out of treatment, which they didn't know I'd just gotten out of treatment. They were just looking for an equine contractor.
Yeah.
So I was 5 times a year, I was in a 3-day workshop being the horse handler, working with the on-site therapist and groups of people doing those equine programs, which kept a mirror in front of me.
Sure. Mm.
You know, and I kept being inspired, but what I realized, make this long story short in a little bit, what I realized is that there's so much more
yeah.
available to us, and there's so much more to life than the way we've defined it, mm-hmm. the way our culture looks at it, the way our belief systems want to hold it,
mm-hmm.
And that what we're really suffering from is a lack of relationship with the mystery, I call it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, with the unknown mm-hmm. side of life, with the presence of life, you know, rather than trying to define everything and qualify everything and live from a place of judgment of everything's mm-hmm. right or wrong or good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
I just realized, you know what, that's a human point of view. That's not life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so how do we step out of live in a relationship with judgment first and step in to live in a relationship with like this amazing experience mm-hmm. that's going on mm-hmm. around us, you know? And also, it's like, why are we not living what we really love? Why are we living what we're supposed to do mm-hmm. as opposed to pursuing the things that are really in our heart and soul? Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. why aren't we more authentic? Because we're all frauds. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're all faking it. We're mm-hmm. all trying to be good enough according to somebody else's book of rules. And typically, it's like a book of rules that you are downloaded with as a kid. And a lot of those books of rules are conflicting.
Because
you're supposed to, as a man, you know, you're supposed to pursue money and power and all that stuff. But then you're supposed to be unconditionally loving and forgiving and kind. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's like, well, I can be kind as long as you don't get in my way or mm-hmm. cost me money. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's there was so much conflict. And then I got out of treatment and I came home and I lived in Hickman County on a farm, which is where the ranch is.
Okay.
So I started the ranch treatment center 3 years after I got out of treatment.
I
just realized, you know what? The treatment world is great and it really doesn't know much. Mm-hmm. It believes a lot, mm-hmm. but it doesn't know much. Mm-hmm. And there's so much more to be revealed.
Yeah.
As they say, more will be revealed. Well, if more is going to be revealed, you got to give it a chance.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and it can only be revealed to the extent that we are willing to relax our illusion of certainty, I mm-hmm. think. Mm-hmm. At least in my own sobriety, that was really an important corner that a monk pointed out to me, that my crisis of faith, quote unquote, that I was complaining about was really just me losing my illusion of certainty, and that this mysterious vacuum that I was living in was actually probably going to be the rest of my life, and you know, that was okay. And so how did you Lee make the shift out of you know, so you've started the ranch and that's continued to be a successful
well-regarded place, yes.
Yeah, well-respected treatment center. But Integrative Life comes onto the scene. How? And what was the, like, the
And I want to know the story. I want to know how you came to the name.
Okay.
Integrative Life Center.
Yeah.
You know what? I started the ranch, and I like simple, like, the ranch. Mm-hmm. Right? We were the first ranch treatment program. And I started the Canyon in Malibu. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was the Canyon.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, I just like simple tagline names. Well, gosh, I guess it'd been 12 years with the ranch, and then I'd moved to Malibu and I'd started some projects on the West Coast. And when I started ILC with Holly, the motivation was that I had been watching people in residential treatment for 12 years. Mm-hmm. And what I realized is residential treatment is a great experience from one point of view, and from another point of view, it's a setup. Mm-hmm. Because you come into a bubble where you're completely protected, everything is controlled, everything is done for you. It's like it's this container.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that container is great because you're safe. Excuse me. You know, there's focus, there's intent, you're surrounded, you're in a community, which is great. And it's also not realistic, because energetically, you're in that bubble, you open up, you're doing a lot of intense work on yourself. You know, from the in the bubble point of view, you're making all this progress, you're doing all this work on your trauma and your story and your behaviors. But it's all happening in a vacuum. And when you leave that bubble, and you go back out into the real world, you're so open energetically, and you have not done anything about shifting your relationship to the real world. Mm-hmm. And so you just get hammered.
Yeah.
You know?
It's a common experience.
And you freak out to a degree, right? Yeah, if you've ever been there, it's like when you leave treatment, you're kind of like a deer in the headlights, man. Going to the grocery store, you feel like a freak. And so what I realized through one of my experiences also in L.A., I worked with a program that was in Koreatown in downtown L.A., and it was in an old hotel building, like a six-story building. Well, the first two floors of that old hotel were a treatment program. The clients lived on the second floor. All the therapist offices were on the first floor. And people said, well, you can't do treatment down there. I mean, at night, you know, there's crack dealers and and hookers on the street. And, I mean, it was rough, right?
Yeah.
And people are saying, well, you can't do treatment in that environment. Well, the truth is there was no more recidivism in that program than there was at the ranch.
Wow.
And because what I realized was we collectively and we individually, we don't give credit to the truth of the strength that we really hold.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And treatment has not really been based on respect. It's been based on control and compliance.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That here's what you got to do to be good enough. And you're going to have to earn your right to be good enough, which is a lie. We're born good enough.
Right.
We die good enough. You know, in between, it's just a matter of what are you going to do? How do you want to live? Right. But our good enough is not in question, my point of view.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I learned in Koreatown that people can do that depth of work and do heavy trauma work and do all this stuff. And they can be doing it and then walking down the street and going to a coffee shop. Well, what it does is it normalizes our relationship to the world while we're doing that level of deep work on ourselves. Mm-hmm. So there is no transition back into the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're in the world.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? And you're not teaching people to be afraid of the world. You're saying every day, look, you got a choice to make, man. If you want to go out there and talk to the crack dealer on the street or go find some heroin, it's a block away. That's cool. Mm-hmm. If you want to change your life, you can change your life. It's your responsibility.
Right.
It's your responsibility. So ILC, I realized however great the ranch was, there still needed to be a congruent continuum.
Right.
So people leaving just kind of Shangri-La at the ranch,
right,
they needed a place to go integrate back into the world.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then I sold the ranch the same year that we started ILC.
Okay.
And, you know, Holly and I have just, the ILC has been a continuously evolving situation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause I'm always about, like, you learn.
Yeah.
You do this work for 8 years. Well, if I'm doing the same thing 8 years later that and living by the same model, then I'm either lazy or not paying attention.
Yeah.
Isn't that the case? Isn't that the case?
Mm-hmm. How many clients, patients can you all accommodate at ILC at once? Like, are we talking, I think I know this answer, but tell us how
we have a continuum of services. And so we have a residential component where we have two homes down on Music Row that provide less intensive clinical services. Mm-hmm. And we have a women's house with 8 beds and a men's house with 8 beds. Mm-hmm. And then we have a higher intensity level of care, where we have two homes on 25 beautiful wooded acres, and we have a men's home and a women's home, and each of those homes have 6 beds. Mm-hmm. But then we have a whole contingency of people who live in their homes, mm-hmm. or they come to Tennessee, maybe they're in a different sober living home, or they get an apartment. Mm-hmm. We have people who quote-unquote commute from mm-hmm. Memphis, Bowling Green, places like that. They'll mm-hmm. come and they'll stay during the week and then go home on the weekends. So mm-hmm. we've got, a wide array of services just depending on what a person needs. So mm-hmm. we don't have a fixed number of people that we work with at any given time. What we do are committed to is having a small enough client-to-therapist caseload that the clients that we're working with are getting individualized attention. Mm-hmm. And most of the people that we work with are people who have probably gone through treatment a number of times, mm-hmm. not always, but, and so they tend to have more complexity, just a lot of stuff going on in their lives. Mm-hmm. And so to be able to keep our caseload smaller, people do get more individual attention than if you're in a program with 100+ beds or something.
Right. And if there's a need for detox and things like that needs to be done prior to coming to see you all.
Mm-hmm. We have relationships with the hospitals in the Nashville area, as well as there's a freestanding detox unit now mm-hmm. here in Nashville.
Right.
And so if somebody, even if they arrive from out of town, a lot of times people will call from another city and they'll say, oh, I've been sober for this, many days or months. Mm-hmm. And we go pick them up at the airport and we realize they need to go straight to detox.
Maybe we need to make a stop.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. So although we don't provide the medical detox ourselves, we will facilitate that right. process, that detox. And then if somebody is on medication still, we were, I think, probably the first intensive outpatient program in this area who was willing to work with people with medication-assisted therapy, Suboxone. Mm-hmm. And again, it's our definition of recovery is very broad, and it's a yes. it's an umbrella of mm-hmm. Recovery is an umbrella term, and so we believe that people who are on medication-assisted protocols deserve to mm-hmm. have the same level of therapy yeah. and mm-hmm. treatment that others. So it's that fluctuates. We can accommodate a lot or a few. It just,
right. Mm-hmm. Well, I can't tell you how refreshing it is to encounter some folks in the field of treatment who are not saying, hey, we cracked the code on recovery and we know exactly what it takes to get every single person sober. Mm-hmm. And if you'll just come in and follow our program exactly, the results are pretty much guaranteed. And if it doesn't work, it's your fault.
And you know what? It's like we, the people who make up the recovery community,
yeah.
mm-hmm. we're the last people on earth that are going to do what we're told. Just to do it. I mean, it's ridiculous.
I have picked that up from you.
Yeah.
Lee.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been known to.
Well, let me ask you this: we've talked about kind of the spiritual principles that underlie all of these ways of making meaning in the world.
Mm-hmm.
This is the Positive Sobriety Podcast, and one of the things that we really try to focus on in our conversations is not what we're telling people not to do,
yes.
but
mm-hmm.
what we're advising as those kind of healthy, helpful, healthful practices that make it possible for us to maybe maintain our balance. Just speaking in broad terms, what are the kind of things that, in your mind, when that phrase hits you, positive sobriety, what describes positive sobriety to you?
Doing what you enjoy, like loving your life. That's the point of it to me.
Oh, man.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, the point of recovery is, there are a number of aspects to it, but to me, the point of recovery is to create your way into a life that you love living.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's real simple.
Yeah.
And there's as many ways of getting there as there are people to come through the door.
Yeah.
Wow.
You know? And so, I hold our position in this work. Like, we're responsible for finding the way to inspire an individual to want to live their life again,
okay.
to want to be who they are really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and then there's a lot involved in that because you're going to have to deal with all the obstacles that are in the way of you respecting yourself,
mm-hmm.
Honoring yourself, pursuing, realizing that living up to everybody else's expectations is probably never going to fulfill you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, that's like that Buddhist hungry ghost saying,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, I can do everything in my power to make everybody around me happy. And I can keep eating that accomplishment, but it's never going to fulfill me because it's not coming from the inside out. It's coming
right.
from the outside in.
Right.
You know, so positive sobriety to me is, it's happiness. It's contentment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I love what you said. I've always watched in the recovery community a tendency to claim accomplishment based on what I don't do anymore.
Right, yeah.
Well, life's not about what we don't do anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Life's about what we're doing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, and so if you want to be happy, joyous, and free, how in the world is that going to come from how many days it's been since the last time I did something stupid.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
or self-destructive.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
It's like, I mean, that's great. I don't do that anymore. But okay, so what? What are we doing?
Yeah.
yeah, yeah. How about you, Holly? What would you say about that positive sobriety comment?
I exactly what Lee is saying. And for me, and I guess the kind of the way we think differently, and I think why Lee and I have worked so well together is there's a vision, and then always the mechanics of how do I do that. Mm-hmm. Yes, I agree, creating a life that I love living, that to me is positive sobriety. And alcohol, drugs, shopping, sex, whatever, is mm-hmm. just not even part of the equation any longer. People right. will ask me, gosh, you've been sober 27 years. Do you ever think about drinking? And I don't, because I don't know how it would enhance my life. And that mm-hmm. to me is that positive sobriety. What, you know, is this going to enhance my life? Mm-hmm. Whatever it is that I'm presented with, is this going to enhance my life or not? And I think choosing, and, you know, I remember learning, in order to really change our lives, we have to change everything about ourselves. And the mm-hmm. mechanics around that are changing our belief systems, the beliefs mm-hmm. that we were brought up with that no longer serve us well. Mm-hmm. You know, somebody else's fears that were overlaid on us when we mm-hmm. were children and we didn't know any better but to accept it and believe it. And so, and changing our feelings, you know, what I feel, you know, is directly related to what I think, mm-hmm. you know, and it's that loop that goes. And then I learned a whole set of behaviors to try to manage what I was feeling, what I was thinking. And so a lot of this in the mechanics of how do I change my life is really about beginning to look at our belief systems and where they came from, how they got so strong, mm-hmm. challenging those belief systems, creating new beliefs, which mm-hmm. then create new thoughts and generate new feelings, and then we can learn new behaviors. And that why, to me, it's a big picture. It's not medication only, therapy only, mm-hmm. this only or that only. It really, and that's that goes back to that integrative approach. Mm-hmm. And we hear a lot about mind, body, spirit. Yay. But that integrative approach is really, you know, mm-hmm. looking at the mind and looking how, you know, the coherence between the mind and the heart or the body and the spirit mm-hmm. really, how do you do that so that, you have that sense of, I can do this. This can be different. Right. I feel it being different. And then when we go back into the old loop, we begin to know how to change, mm-hmm. you know, stop those thoughts and bring in something different. And
yeah. I think one of the reasons I like the name even just of Integrative Life is because the people that I see come in and they have, we all, I think, come from this somewhere in the beginning. There's good me and bad me. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And good me is sober when I stay sober, and bad me is me when I use and misbehave or whatever we want to, you know, call it, shame. And that there is actually, all of this belongs under one umbrella.
Yeah.
How do we get all these things that are true about us to coexist and make peace with that, which is what I'm hearing, I think, mm-hmm. you guys say. And so if I were to come and kind of submit myself to your I don't want to just say program, but I mean
your approach.
Yeah. What would I experience as a person that came into one of those 8 beds on the men's side of the street?
Mm-hmm. Well, from the get-go, what we wanted to do is to create an environment, because again, environment is very important in, you know, our mind, body, spirit. And so we want people, as they come in, to feel like they can just kind of exhale and say, okay, mm-hmm. you know, this is a safe place. So, you know, everything from our buildings, and they don't look like hospitals and they don't look like institutions. It looks like the furniture that you have at home. You know,
mm-hmm. some of it is the furniture.
Right, right.
Like we have our artwork hanging on the
right,
walls.
Right, right. Uh-huh. You know, a lot of personal touches uh-huh. on the walls and in the rooms there. And so really just being able to have that sense of safety, that this is a safe place that I can really truly begin to take off these masks and learn what to put on, you know, what to do instead of pretending over here. All of our therapists are master's level therapists, and you know, all of the services that are provided are provided by master's mm-hmm. level folks,
mm-hmm. yeah.
and which is not always the case. Mm-hmm. And
most of them, it's a second career.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So they've got the life experience.
They've lived in the real world. They've chased the kind of the standard beliefs that we were all taught of what we need to do to be good enough. And
right.
yeah, so they've reincarnated themselves,
right.
you mm-hmm. know, in this mm-hmm. lifetime already. So they're familiar with reinventing yourself.
Yeah.
You mm-hmm. know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we provide the pretty standard evidence-based practices, cognitive behavioral therapy, dialectical behavior therapy, those, you know, those mm-hmm. kinds of therapies. We also, all of our staff are trained in trauma resolution mm-hmm. Interventions, EMDR, eye movement desensitization mm-hmm. and reprocessing, brain spotting, comprehensive resource model. These are all focused therapies that really help bypass the ego mind and go into that midbrain so that the healing is done at that deeper level. And then we also, just a lot of our research when we decided what we wanted to do was that cutting edge research being done by Bessel van der Kolk and Peter Levine around mm-hmm. the somatic body oriented therapies. Mm-hmm. So we also have incorporated acupuncture, acu-detox, yoga, massage and body work, mm-hmm. breath work. So these are all body-centered therapies that help mm-hmm. release, you
sure.
know, 'cause we all know trauma memory is stored in the body.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so being able to help, you know, the body begin to release the stress and the, you know, cortisol, the hormones that have created, you know, people living in constant states of fear and survival. And so, and this is where I agree with Lee that in residential treatment, a lot of times the thought is, well, let's take people out of their stressful environments. Well, most of our stress is created between our ears.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And so being able to teach people meditation and mindfulness practice are components of our program too. And I like to say too that these things that we're doing, they're not amenities. Some
right.
you know, people will say, "Oh, these are our other amenities." No, these are components of the program mm-hmm. that really are, we want to teach you how in meditation and mindfulness to become familiar with yourself, to get to know yourself, to get grounded and solid and centered mm-hmm. and present in yourself so that you're not in a constant state of survival and then releasing that cortisol and the stress hormones mm-hmm. that then create the disease in our bodies.
Right. And to intervene on those loops of judgment.
Yes. Mm.
Because we've been born into a world that is so enmeshed in judgment.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's good or bad or right or wrong, or
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
you should be yeah. this and you should do that. And that loop of judgment's an internal dialogue
mm-hmm.
that goes on all the time,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean,
yeah.
from the moment you wake up in the morning and look at yourself in the mirror to,
yeah.
I mean, all day long and all of our interactions. And to break that loop of judgment and bring awareness into this whole experience that, okay, what am I giving my attention to?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
yeah.
What's the story I'm telling myself? Is that really true?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and just because I believe something, I mean, so what? We mm-hmm. make up our beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
We act like our beliefs are sacred.
Yeah.
Well,
or
we
true.
Made them up.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's a reason there's a word truth and a word belief. They're not the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah. yeah.
So, you know, and the power of community, that's what,
yes.
that's what touched me when I was in treatment mm-hmm. 22 years ago, 21 years ago. You know, it was the community. Mm-hmm. That I connected to. The therapists were great,
mm-hmm.
And I remained friends with a lot of them, you know, years after. But what held me in place was the community.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so my point of view around all this is a healthy community is a diverse community.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And that's reflected all through nature.
Mm-hmm.
So a healthy community in the woods or on a ranch mm-hmm. has the more diversity, the healthier the
sure.
community.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's the same in a recovery model, a healing model. The more diversity in that model, the more different opportunities each individual has to experience something
wow.
that will inspire them mm-hmm. or that they'll be comfortable with to connect to as their support going forward. So mm-hmm. we have smart recovery meetings. We do refuge recovery meetings. We have 12-step meetings. We do sweat lodges. And we require our clients have to go to 5 meetings a week or 3.
Recovery meetings,
yeah.
5 at the
Yeah,
morning.
5 mm-hmm. recovery meetings a week, but we don't tell you what those are.
Mm-hmm.
We say, listen, here's a list of all this stuff going on.
Mm-hmm.
But for you, it may be that you're really tuned into yoga and you go to yoga 3 times a week.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a relationship that supports your life and your growth,
mm-hmm.
that you have a positive interactive relationship. So it's really about developing relationships that feed us
mm-hmm.
and support us. And mm-hmm. to step out of this point of view of judging everything as right or wrong, because it's not. It just
yeah.
is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, life's cause and effect. Life's not good and bad.
Right.
Not really.
But this addresses the whole addiction is a connection disorder kind of.
And not just addiction, David, but eating disorders and mm-hmm. mental health conditions and mm-hmm. just, you know, as Lee said, I wanted to just really point out that connection. And as you said, that connection that begins to happen, that connection with self,
yeah.
a connection with something greater than I am
mm-hmm.
and connection to this community as a whole. I mean,
yeah.
you
yeah.
know, look at the 4 of us sitting here together. We're all nodding
mm-hmm.
and,
right.
you know, the yeah. smiles on yeah. the face of and that community. That begins to develop when we feel a part of becomes really important. And that's why so many people end up staying in the same town that they go to treatment in, because
mm-hmm.
a lot of times they develop that community. And
mm-hmm.
if, you know, that it's like, okay, here are my people. I'm going to stay
well,
here
and it's
and
respectful.
Build a life.
Yeah, yeah.
When you meet a person who's suffering,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they're broke down and they're heartbroken and they've got these behaviors that are wearing them out, right? Addictions or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
When you meet them from a place of respect of, look, you're okay. You're good enough. You don't believe it.
Mm-hmm.
Your behaviors don't reflect it. But the truth is, underneath all this stuff, you're really okay. And our responsibility is to support you in unraveling everything that's in the way of you being okay with yourself.
And believing that?
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, and coming to experience that. More
mm-hmm.
important than the belief
mm-hmm.
is to experience that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and to bring their attention to it.
Yeah.
Like, our clients will go out to eat somewhere that serves alcohol, and people freak out. I can't believe you took us somewhere that serves alcohol. And it's like, look, dude, you can't go fill your car up with gas without there being beer in the cooler.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we don't teach fear.
Mm-hmm.
We teach an awareness of being responsible for when fears pop up, rather than going into judgment or reaction,
mm-hmm.
just be aware. It's like,
mm-hmm.
okay, and you're responsible for the choices you make, and you went and you ate dinner, and you didn't drink a fifth of whiskey, you didn't even have a beer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're fine because mm-hmm. you're present and you're grounded and you're taking responsibility for yourself. We're not teaching people to give responsibility away to a program.
Mm-hmm.
We're teaching people to hold responsibility for themselves because you're capable.
Mm-hmm.
And we know you're capable, even though you may not believe it.
Right.
I know you're capable.
Yeah. Why do you think there are so, for many people, and I know we're going to have to wrap up here in just a second, but I'd love to know why, given the approach that you all have, why you think that in many traditional or more traditional, I guess, modalities of treatment, of inpatient work, that there are multiple visits. The average person that seeks treatment maybe goes 3 times, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard that statistic. Why do you believe in those situations that is kind of the revolving door of treatment, and then as opposed to something that's more holistic or organic? And I'm not sure if those are words you all would choose for your program, so I'm not imposing those. But can you speak briefly just on that multiple trips to rehab? This is my 3rd trip. This is my 5th trip. And many times they go back to the same place that they were before to do it again.
Well, and that's a direct reflection of that old statement, trying the same thing over mm-hmm. and over again, expecting different results. Mm-hmm. Well, we want to put that on a pattern of behavior that's destructive, but why don't we turn around and put that on, why do you keep going to the same program over and over again? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, my point of view around it is Holly and I have been doing this for a long time. Mm-hmm. My relationship with treatment and recovery work is I just want happy people. I want people to be inspired, and I want them to live a good life. They don't need to agree with me. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not I don't need validation from mm-hmm. my clients that mm-hmm. I'm right and they did what I said do. Mm-hmm. I want to return people's power to them. Mm-hmm. And I want to return a sense of, I want them to recover a sense of faith in themselves. Mm-hmm. And I want them to develop relationships that support them living a life that they are aware that they are 100% responsible for their choices mm-hmm. and that the cause and effect of our choices is nothing more than the cause and effect, right? Mm-hmm. And that you're going to be living the results of the choices that you're making. That's what you wake up to, mm-hmm. is the choices you made over the last few months or years, mm-hmm. right? And so it's all a positive orientation. And it does require taking responsibility for yourself. It requires discipline. It requires structure. So it's not easy. Mm-hmm. But to bring people into an experience that will guide them back to owning faith in themselves will ultimately end up setting them free. And it does take practice, and it does take time. Mm-hmm. As opposed to people coming into a program that says, if you want what we have, we're going to teach you how to do this. And if you do what we say, you will be okay. Mm-hmm. Well, that doesn't require that number one, it's not respectful because mm-hmm. you're not saying, okay, well, first we need to get to know who you are. Mm-hmm. And we need to get to know what your dreams are, what your mm-hmm. goals are, what your heartbreaks are. Like, we're here to serve who you really are as a human being.
Mm-hmm. We're not here to serve ourselves. And who you want to be as a human being.
Yeah.
Who you want to be as a human being, not who we think you need to be. Mm. I think, you know, part of the answer to your question, David, is I think it's what people know to do. Mm-hmm. Is, oh, well, I went to treatment once and I felt a little bit better. Well, maybe if I go back again this time, it'll work. And then maybe if I go back again this time, it'll work. So mm-hmm. I think in some ways it provides some reprieve mm-hmm. for people. Mm-hmm. And I think for parents particularly, you know, mm-hmm. as their children or adult children, putting them back in treatment time and time again, you know, as a parent, that's, mm-hmm. you know, one of the worst fears that we have mm-hmm. is that we're going to lose, you know, our child yeah. mm-hmm. or somebody we love. And at least if they're in a treatment program, we can kind of take a breath mm-hmm. yeah. and breathe for a few minutes before the next thing that crisis. We have to, yeah, the next yeah. crisis. And so I think some of it is that this is what we know. This is what's familiar. This mm-hmm. is what has become the norm in mm-hmm. our yeah. culture. Mm-hmm. I mean, we don't see that in every culture. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And because there haven't been many other alternatives.
And either. We're taught to give our power away in mm-hmm. our culture. If you have a problem, you need to go find an expert that can give you the solution to your problem. Mm-hmm. We're not taught, if you have a problem, then let's help you unravel your relationship with that situation so that you might find a way to recreate your way out of it. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's, again, it's about returning power and faith to mm-hmm. who we are really. Mm-hmm. And some people would say that's egoic, but it's the least egoic thing in the world. When you really realize that, man, all this suffering and heartbreak and insanity and misery in my life has been my responsibility because I've been the one that's creating it. And what have I been doing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, it wasn't my parents' fault. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't the trauma from 20 years ago that's leading me to make the decisions I'm making today. Mm-hmm. I'm making them today because I don't know any better and I'm trapped in a loop.
Right. It's become a habit.
And it's me doing it to me now. Mm-hmm. It's not that experience 20 years ago. That's 20 years back.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But I didn't know any better.
Right.
But to help people do that, you guys have to spend, it seems to me, more time, understand the story. This is a unique experience to each individual, because each individual isn't going to respond the same, to getting permission to think about what they want.
But the miracle of the community supports all of this. Mm-hmm. So when this is the energy and the points of view that you're holding your community with, mm-hmm. then they're all having their own unique experiences, mm-hmm. and they're all sharing their unique experiences, and they're not being judged based on a guideline of this is what it needs to look like.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They're being supported in having that unique experience, And each one is being inspired in their own unique way. So there's a collective that happens.
Yeah.
And an energy that happens around that community.
Mm-hmm.
And it shifts the whole dynamic.
Yeah.
Away from a treatment center. A lot of treatment centers are very control oriented.
Mm-hmm.
You need to control the behavior of the patients.
Mm-hmm.
We're the opposite of that.
Mm-hmm.
We're like, look, we're not going to try and control you, so it's going to require that you take a higher level of responsibility. We're going to put guidelines and structure and accountability in place,
mm-hmm.
and you're going to have to meet that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if you're just dead set against anybody telling you what to do or doing anything different, then you're just not going to be here long.
Mm-hmm.
You need to go somewhere that'll control everything for you,
mm-hmm.
because that's a whole lot easier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But the truth is, people do step up
mm-hmm.
when
mm-hmm.
you meet them from a place of respect.
Yeah.
They really meet you. They all meet you there. You know, I've come to have a lot more faith in what we are in a community of people that everyone else will say, well, they're a disaster and they'll burn the house down and they'll do this and they'll do that. I'm like, well, if you meet them with that expectation and that attitude,
mm-hmm.
yeah, they probably will.
Mm-hmm.
And if you meet them from a place of, hey, brother, how you doing? You know, like, what's up?
Mm-hmm.
And Holly's famous for, she's always solution oriented,
mm-hmm.
you know, not control oriented.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we come to resolution in this conflict,
mm-hmm.
and it serves you, and it serves your life.
How do you want this to be different?
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
And people respond to the way you meet them,
mm-hmm.
to the energy you meet them with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I really appreciate your flexibility. Resonated with a point you made earlier about the strength that comes from diversity and community.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I've got a hippie daughter who preaches to me ad nauseum about the evils of monoculture. And I used to look at a cornfield and think how beautiful it is, because it's just uniform.
Corn.
It's just pure corn, right? And my daughter has taught me the beauty of just a landscape of woods and all of these different organisms that have mutually supportive relationships with one another.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Those of our listeners who, for themselves, for someone they love, know that treatment is on the horizon, that's the next right thing to do, and they don't just want another cornfield, how do they find the Integrative Life Center?
Mm-hmm. Well, our number is 615-891-2226, and so they can call us directly and get a human being on the other end of the phone.
Oh. That's actually at the program.
Which is actually at our program, not,
not
out in California somewhere.
Wherever.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly. And our website, integrativelifecenter.com. And so, you know, please feel free to give us a call, even if it's just to talk or to say, I have a question. What do you do about this? Because, again, we work with people who have not just addictions and all types of addictions, but eating disorders, mental health disorders, and kind of everything in mm-hmm. between. Rarely do we find somebody that says, this is the only thing that's not working in my
mm-hmm.
life. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's 615-891-2226, and www.integrativelifecenter.com. So
great.
Reach out.
Well, Lee and Holly, thank you so much for joining us. And we'll be right back in a moment here on the Positive Sobriety Podcast.
Welcome back to the Positive Sobriety Podcast. And Nate, that was a really interesting, enlightening conversation where I felt like I had to give myself permission to really think outside the box a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
And listen to some ways that are working, that people are experiencing good, healthy results in just discovering themselves. And
yeah.
the Integrative Life Center is not just about creating sober people who don't do something, but rather leaving with a whole sense of identity.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I really like the energy that Lee carries, this
mm-hmm.
kind of this challenger guy. And I love the commitment that both of them have to this kind intention toward ourselves and toward the world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was refreshing. A lot to think about. I'm gonna replay this conversation a couple times, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a longer conversation than we usually have, but it's really worth it.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, sadly, time has flown. We've come to the end of this episode of the podcast. We have more guests coming up. It's going to be a good year ahead. Mm-hmm. But now, as we head toward the conclusion of this one, I want to say, as we close, David, thank you for jumping into this enterprise with me.
It's my pleasure, Nate. I couldn't imagine not being resentful if you had asked anybody else. Is that a thank you?
Yeah, there you go. Oh, by the way, you know, we don't say this very often, but to our listeners, we'd love to hear from you, and you can reach us by email. And it's a very simple email address. It's just positivesobrietypodcast@gmail.com.
Right. Love to hear.
All right. Well, until next time, I'm Nate.
I'm David.
And we're your pals on the Positive Sobriety Podcast. The Positive Sobriety Podcast is recorded at Crossroads for the Nations in Brentwood, Tennessee. Live producer Rick Schnelly, music by Rick Schnelly, theme music by Matt Ulrich, hair and makeup by Lyle Lovett, wardrobe by Kathy Gifford.